Welcome to the Garden America Show, the country's most listened to gardening program. If you're watching us on Facebook Live, you can also post your questions and comments right there on our page during the broadcast. Now, here's Brian Main, John Bagnasco, and Tiger Palafox on the Garden America Radio and Media Network.
Hey, there you are. Welcome, Garden America Nation. Thank you for joining us on this Saturday morning. If you're listening to this replay on BizTalk Radio, we do appreciate that. You are 1 week behind, but the information is still the same. Great information. I'm Brian Main. Hello there. We've got Tiger Palafox. You want to jump in, Tiger, while I turn off my, every weekend, got to turn off my laptop.
I think we're on weekend number three.
But like I said last week, when I turn it off, it defaults back to going on again. I forget about that. Hey, you'll notice a missing chair today. John Bagnasco. Nasco is in Kentucky. Is he there for a horse race? Oh, no, it's a wedding, right?
Yeah, horse race.
He's there for a wedding, so it's going to be just Tiger and myself today. Glad you could join us. Great gardening information. Our guest is going to be talking about bees. Hillary's been with us before, Tiger.
Yeah, she has, and it's going to be a fun conversation. We're talking about more than just beekeeping. We're talking about the importance of bees and how to incorporate them into the landscape, not necessarily in a beekeeping way, but just in a general, good old-fashioned having bees in your garden way.
So you don't have to be a beekeeper.
No, you don't. But it's funny, you mentioned horse racing for John, and I kind of feel the only reason why he would ever go to a horse race is because of the floral arrangement that they drape over the horse
at the end of the race.
Winning.
Yes, and he's there talking about
the horses or the race itself.
Looking at all the different flowers and the arrangement and that kind of thing. Yeah. But I believe he is there for a wedding. Yeah. So he'll return next week. So it's just us today. Got to put up with us, if you don't mind. Hey, questions, comments, too. As Tiger mentioned, we're going to be discussing bees and how to incorporate them in the landscape, so on and so forth. So we do welcome your questions, your comments. And, of course, after the interview, whatever direction you want to take this show, feel free to do that as well.
Yeah, lots of stuff happening in the garden right now. So it's kind of fun time to just chat about what you have going on, different things. When I was out walking around in my yard this week, I just noticed different things happening, and you just start to do your own little research as far as what's right. happening in the garden. You know, my peppers had curly leaves. I didn't see any bugs. I didn't see any problems, but I was just wondering about this kind of curly leaf growth that they were developing. I looked it up, and it's like, oh, it's normal for that pepper to do that for the new growth, and then it unfolds and comes out normally after a while. But when it's a young plant, it did that. And I was like, oh, cool. I didn't know that specific pepper.
One more thing to know about. Yeah, my peppers are starting to grow. I'm getting tomatoes. You're right. This is the time of the year when things should be popping.
Yeah, and this week I'll be posting some pictures to our social media because I have some dahlias that are blooming right now. I have some... What was the other thing I was excited about showing? Oh, so I have some tomatoes, and this is something that we don't always realize that you need to do is if you have critters, some of the things you can do is have those sacrificial plants. So
the ones that you tell the critters, go ahead, you can have these.
Exactly. And I've got that happening where I have one tomato that is beautiful red tomato, and I can see that the critters are eating away at it slowly. But then to the side of it, I've got tomatoes that they're not touching at all. And I think they're just happy with those ones. So I'm like, all right, well, I'm going to keep that plant happy and going because I'll sacrifice those tomatoes
right.
for my other tomatoes to develop and grow. And so I got that happening. Oh, I got these sunflowers. I have these sunflowers that in 4 weeks are over 6 feet tall.
Wait a minute.
No blooms yet.
From the time you planted them?
Seed. From seed.
4 weeks. Okay, so that's a month.
Yes.
That's faster than a radish grows.
That is crazy, right?
Wait a minute. Is this like common knowledge? Did you expect this?
No, I didn't. I didn't. And it's funny because in this area, I've got ones that are 6 feet tall, and then I've got ones that are like 3 inches tall. And so it's just, I don't understand why these specific grouping of them
seed.
Is just growing like.
I mean, you could put a time lapse
mad
camera on that.
Yeah, I should because you know how sunflowers also move with the sun.
Right.
But, I mean, they don't have the flowers yet, but the plant
6 feet in a month. I don't think bamboo grows that fast, does it?
I know.
Golly. Anybody else growing sunflowers that had that kind of
result
as Tiger from seed in a month, 6 feet?
Yeah. It's
wow.
crazy.
It is
so
crazy.
It's fun. It's fun to see that stuff happening. So I got a lot going on right now, and I'm excited about it. You got bananas growing, got the sunflowers growing, got the dahlias growing, got my vegetables growing. Lots
hey,
of
speaking
fun
of
stuff.
That one banana, I've got two banana trees, but the smaller one I told you during the wintertime looked really bad. And I thought, yeah, looks like I'm going to lose it. And then you and John said, that's a tropical. It doesn't like this time of the year.
Yeah.
But this thing has bounced back.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah, it's doing very well.
And so when it bounced back, the cool thing about bananas is they unravel their leaves yep. from the middle, right?
Exactly.
So did you just see these, like, this spire of new growth
started
all of a sudden
to see
come out of the middle of
new
it.
Growth. I said, oh, okay, this is a good sign, but let's see if it keeps going.
Yeah.
And it did. And now it looks like it's green, deep green, healthy, looks beautiful.
The one thing too on the bananas you'll notice is that trunk. As that, because it's all coming out of the middle.
Right.
So you'll start to see that trunk really gain in size with the new growth coming up too. So they get pot bound real quick. So watch out for that.
Yeah. Oh, that's good, because this is about maybe 3 feet tall.
Yeah.
Now the other one outside the front door is probably 12 feet. It's huge.
Jeez.
With a huge trunk. This is the one John gave me that was about the size of this one that I have now in the patio.
Yeah.
Up to my knees maybe.
Yeah.
And it's in 2 years. It's just ridiculous.
Have you cut any leaves off?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
When you cut the leaves off, isn't it crazy that the water just falls out?
It's very moist. And I wait to the last minute.
It's dripping like a faucet.
I wait to the last minute to when they're really yellow
yeah.
and look really bad, and then I cut them off. But again, at the same time, we continue to get the new growth in the middle, that little spiral coming
yeah.
out. So,
yeah.
yeah, that's what's happening in my backyard, my garden. Everything looks really good.
Nice.
I kind of question myself, like,
yeah.
and what are you doing
yeah.
right?
Yeah, right. Right.
You know, now sometimes plants will grow despite the owner.
Right.
You know,
so oh, yeah.
We call it, you know, benign neglect. You know, just leave it alone. Just give me some water. I'm fine.
Well, I went to a client's house in La Jolla yesterday where about probably 2 months ago, I planted a back slope for him with California natives, some Baccharis, coyote bush, Ceanothus, California lilac, some white sage, Salvia apiana. And this was a native hillside, meaning there was no irrigation going to this hillside.
So nothing, huh?
So we timed it out where we planted it right after the first rain, so the ground was wet. And then it had multiple rains after that to kind of establish the plants. I'd say he has about 65% success rate, which is really good, you know, counting on that he never has watered these plants, you know, aside from the natural rainwater. But it's shocking to me sometimes how you'll see one plant thrive. And I'm talking plants have doubled, tripled in size on this slope. And then you'll see other plants that died and just almost in the same area, same environment. And that one just didn't make it.
You know what? They're just like people. You know, you have healthy people, yep. unhealthy people.
Yeah.
You know, you put somebody in the same room. You follow a family, neighbors, and, you know, with the same environment. And for some reason, certain people get sick.
Yeah.
And same way with animals and plants. Plants are the same thing. And I know a lot of people get frustrated. They go, what am I doing wrong? This one survived and I'm doing the same thing. I'm watering, I'm fertilizing. Just may not have come from a healthy background.
Yeah. That plant may have had something that you yeah. didn't even know it had, and that's what happened.
So we have a couple of we should back up here. I know people okay. are jumping in quickly with a couple of questions and comments.
All right,
which we're happy to take.
Let's get into the comment feed here. Hold on.
Exactly. Bring up that comment feed
yeah.
so we don't want to miss anybody, because after this segment, going into a segment two after the break, we'll bring on Hillary and we're going to be talking about bees, and it's going to be a good conversation, an interesting conversation. The last time we had her on, there was a lot of back and forth in terms of questions, comments, and people seemed to really enjoy it. So that's what we're going to be doing today. Got the comments up there going up to the top?
I do. And so what do we have here? Mealybug in one tomato. So mealybug on tomatoes. Carla says, good morning. Thank you. I noticed peppers too. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Noticed it on peppers
right.
as well.
Was that just a comment about her mealybug, or how do I get rid of it?
Yeah. Plant versus something. Tomato plant. I don't know the question, but, you know, I don't see too many mealybugs on tomatoes that often, but just the general neem oil, washing it off should kind of take
right.
care of it. If you want to use something stronger, you can use pyrethrins as well. But And that's the thing too, is somebody was asking me this week about, you know, taking care of your plants. And I was just saying, just washing them off is a really good thing to do mm-hmm. to get in the habit of. Maybe once a week you're out there, hose them off. They're growing so fast right now that it's hard to keep up with some of the pests and the problems, but washing them off actually cures a lot of stuff. And people say, oh, I don't want spiders. And that's fine too. You don't have to have spiders, but washing off the plant will help.
It's like washing your face. You know what? Clearing the pore.
There you go. It is. It is.
It's exactly. Yeah. Because I do the same thing. And I also, after I water them, I give them a good strong misting. You know, nice. I mist them. And then I'll hose them down, you know, at times as well. But you bring up a good point. Hey, that said, this has been a very quick first segment. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, be sure to get John's quote of the week up on your phone there, Tiger. So okay. we can do the quote of the week. We're going to bring in our guest, Hillary. What's your last name again, Hillary?
Hillary Kearney. Okay. Girl Next Door Honey.
Okay. Girl Next Door Honey. Going to be talking about bees, how to incorporate them. A lot of interesting facts. So do stay with us. John is off this week. It's myself, Brian Main, Tiger Palafox. We're going to take a break. Thank you for joining us as we kick off your Saturday morning or maybe Saturday afternoon here on Garden America. Back right after this on Biz Talk Radio. Quicker on Facebook Live as we get a hold of our guest, Hillary. Stay with us.
Welcome back to the Garden America Radio Show with Brian, John, and Tiger. The phone lines are open right now at 855-424-9825. That's 855-424-9825 or john@gardenamerica.com.
All right, those on BizTalk Radio, thank you for tuning into this pre-recorded show and supporting our various sponsors here, Garden America and BizTalk Radio. For the rest of us here on Facebook Live, here we go. Questions, comments, we welcome you right there on our Facebook page. So, Tiger, we've had Hillary on before. People loved it. We're going to do it again.
Yeah. And are we bringing Hillary on right now, or am I doing the quote of the week?
You're going to do the quote of the week first.
Okay.
And then Hillary is, in fact, she's listening to your quote of the week okay. as well.
Oh, well, it's good because it's fitting with our topic this morning. And the bee collects honey from flowers in such a way as to do the least damage or destruction to them. And he leaves them whole, undamaged, and fresh, just as he found them. And that's from St. Francis de Sales.
No, I know. Spell it.
Sales. He's a sales.
Oh, yeah.
He's a sales saint. So the saint for
exactly
the salespeople. No, I don't know.
So you know what? As we bring Hillary on, we can talk about that exact quote and see what she thinks about that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that, you know, probably that's a bit of Hillary's model and how she does things as well. Being a beekeeper, being a bee advocate, and a educator for all things bees. Good morning, Hillary. How are you?
Great. How you doing?
Good, good. Did you hear that quote of the week that I just tried to stumble through?
Yeah.
and it is interesting to think because, I mean, not to go off on a soapbox, but, you know, a lot of creatures in nature do things in a way where they will leave the natural balance intact. You know, I mean, you know, gazelles and these animals will graze plains, but then they move to a different plane to be able to allow that one to recope and recover after they've been there. And, you know, elephants will move through an area and eat, but then they don't come back until that is plentiful. I think, you know, humans are probably the only creature out here that just kind of move through areas, destroy it, and then never come back to it because there's nothing left for them. But bees don't do that, right, Hillary?
No, it's really funny. That quote is hilarious because it's, well, bees that pollinate are all female. So that's it. The pronouns and.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to ask that same question when Tiger, you know, mentioned, how do we know that it's a male or female? And you say it's got to be a female, right?
Yeah. So the females are the ones collecting pollen. So, you know, in honeybees, most of the hive is female. And then when we're talking about other species of bees, the males, I guess, sometimes contribute if they're a different species. But we'll give it to them. Okay?
Yeah. Way to give us a little bit there.
Yeah.
But also what's interesting is that there's a group of bees that are called leaf cutter bees that actually do, you know, cut the leaves, but they're cute. So we'll leave it. They cut very perfect little holes. So it's kind of decorative if you think of it that way.
Yeah, there you go. they're actually enhancing it, right? By making it look pretty, not just doing damage to it.
Yeah.
Hillary, good morning. Thank you for joining us this morning. You know, lots of fun stuff to cover in terms of bees. But let's start off by telling our listeners a little bit about your background that aren't aware of who you are and what you do. Because kind of a neat story that you didn't, you know, start with bees. You know, you were kind of started as a business person, and you kind of found your calling in bees, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't call myself a business person. I studied fine art, and I went to school at UC Santa Cruz, and I graduated with a degree in fine art, and then I moved back to San Diego, my hometown, and I didn't really know what I was going to do, but I just really wanted to do something creative, and it was right when the recession hit, so there was like no jobs, and there were definitely no creative jobs. And so I just kind of ended up getting stuck at an office job, doing like administrative work for a software company. And that while I was there, I was just like, you know, trying to do anything in my free time to like keep my soul alive. And that's when I started doing like a lot of beekeeping. So it just kind of like snowballed once I started keeping bees and people started finding out about it. They're like, oh, can you teach a class and can you visit my kid's classroom?
And, you know, from that stemmed you writing books, putting together games, and having a whole line of apparel as well, right?
Yeah, then I just started, you know, using that creative energy and doing things like under the umbrella of bees, which has been really awesome for me because, you know, there's so many things that I love to do and that I'm interested in, and I've been able to do a lot of those things, but just under the topic of bees. So yeah, like writing two books, and I've created two games, and just like teaching aids for other beekeepers who do what I do, and I'm always coming up with new stuff, so that's really fun for me.
And you currently are, what are you focused on right now? Are you, because I know in the past you were actually teaching classes, you were helping maintain people's hives, helping them set them up and maintain them afterwards. What is your kind of current focus right now? Because I know things have changed over the past couple of years for you as well.
Yeah. Well, I still do. Obviously, we've put classes, the in-person classes, and, you know, the kids' presentations are on hold right now. And I usually do in-person tours, too. So I'm hoping that we can start them again a little later this summer. But for right now, we're just in kind of a holding pattern with those. And then I have an assistant now, and I had a baby. So I had to kind of step back from a lot of the day-to-day, like, bee maintenance. But I still do have clients where I'm managing hives. I am, you know, I have bees at the San Diego Zoo and at the Natural History Museum that I'm managing, and I still get out there and do bee removals. But I'm focusing more on, right now I'm working on my next book, and I'm hoping to illustrate it because I really want to get back to my roots. So I've been like drawing a lot of bees lately, and I'm trying to convince my publisher to let me illustrate it.
All right.
Yeah.
Nice. That sounds exciting and a fun adventure as well. Not only just writing the book, but then also illustrating it. That seems like a lot of work.
So, Hillary, you can obviously draw. Is that what you're telling us?
Yes. Yeah.
Hillary, so you know, I think when people think of bees, they instantly go to that kind of hive, keeping them, harvesting the honey. You have to go maintain these boxes, and what you described as far as kind of the standard bees. But one of the things we wanted to chat about today was there's a whole other line of bees that are gaining in popularity right now, and they're much easier to maintain. There's really not the keeping aspect of it anymore. Can you kind of tell us about what is these bees are called, and how are they different than the standard European honeybee?
Yeah, so I mean, you said it, that honeybees are from Europe and they were imported to the U.S. You know, just like horses and like, you know, like us, like people.
Yeah, exactly.
But they're very complicated, and you have to do a lot, and you have to learn a lot, and it's a very steep learning curve to have honeybees. And then even just having the hive in your yard, you have to dedicate a lot of space to that hive. You know, you don't want them close to a lot of activity. and they sting, and you can get into trouble with them. So,
hey Hillary, I'm so sorry. I led you into a question, but then we have to do take a commercial break, and I'm sorry. But when we get right back, we'll continue talking with Hillary Kearney, Girl Next Door Honey, about bees.
Absolutely, and pay a few bills on Biz Talk Radio, our great sponsors. We do appreciate that. If you are watching us live on Facebook, it's going to be a very quick break, so do stay with us. Hey, questions, comments, you can post them right there on our Facebook page as we continue our conversation with Hillary. But as Tiger mentioned, going to take a quick break. I'm Brian Main. He is Tiger Palafox, and we are Garden America.
Welcome back to the Garden America Radio Show with Brian, John, and Tiger. The phone lines are open right now at 855-424-9825. That's 855-424-9825 or John at gardenamerica.com.
And just like that, here on Facebook Live, we are back a bit longer on Biz Talk Radio. But again, we do appreciate your support. And a shout out to Travis at the network at Biz Talk Radio for packaging up our show and doing a great job each week, keeping us on the air. That said, we are talking bees with Hillary Kearney, and we're just getting into the conversation, Tiger.
Yeah, before the break, Hillary was talking about the standard beekeeping and how you need space, you need these boxes, you need to maintain them. So go ahead and continue your thought. I'm sorry I interrupted you, Hillary.
Yeah, so it basically it's just kind of complicated to get into keeping honeybees, but you get honey, and then you get the pollination. You get a lot of pollination because there's a lot of bees in a honeybee hive. There's like 50,000 bees in there. But these native bee houses or solitary bee houses, these are for bees that are solitary. So they don't have a hive, and they don't make honey, and they don't sting. And that means that you could basically set up these little houses for them, like a bird house, and you don't really have to do much of anything after you set it up. You're supposed to clean the little tunnels for, like every 2 years or something, but you don't really have to do a lot with them, and there's not like a risk of stings. You don't get honey, but you do get pollination, and these bees are a lot of them are struggling population-wise. A lot of them are going extinct, and so providing something for them is cool and helpful to the environment in a way that, you know, honeybees are struggling, but they don't really need our help because there's already beekeepers that are taking care of them, and because they're so tied to our agriculture, there's a lot of money going into helping honeybees. But these other species of bees are very important as well, and they're not getting the attention that they need. So it's awesome that people are starting to realize that. And it's usually, you know, it's usually a much better choice for people. So if you're someone who's thinking, like, I want to do something to save the bees, this is the thing to do versus getting a honey beehive.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, you bring up a good point because everybody hears about, oh, bee population collapse and this. And you're like, it is a problem. We need to be aware of what's happening. But at the same time, they're replenishing the bee populations because it's a business. I mean, you know, to put it in a farming standpoint, it's nobody's up in arms when we're harvesting fields of lettuces because we go and replant the fields of lettuce. And even though the field might fail or collapse, there's no chance it's ever going to really go away because there's business behind it to replenish it, keep it going. And then you're saying, well, but then there's these other bees out there that aren't getting replenished, aren't getting the help. And I did put a picture up right now on our Facebook feed of a simple model of one of these homes. And next to it is, just to put it in a description, if you can't see it, Hillary, is a exactly like a birdhouse with these little tunnels and tubes and twigs and moss in it, as far as that goes. And then right next to it is also a simple one where it's almost like a can on its side where it just has almost looks like cinnamon tubes sticking out of it. But I'm sure they're little wooden tubes that they can make. And these are the homes that these kind of solitary native bees appreciate and will go into, right? And you're saying you can incorporate these into your yard, but not have the, you know, thousands of bees. And you're saying these bees also don't necessarily sting people?
Yeah, they have stingers, but they don't sting. They're very docile, so you wouldn't have to worry about that at all. And that means you can place it anywhere in your yard. You don't have to, you know, put it in an area that you're not going to frequent or anything like that. You know, the designs are really variable, but they basically do look like a birdhouse with a bunch of tube-like hollows in some way. You know, like sometimes it's a bundle of bamboo, but basically you just want hollow sticks of some kind, or sometimes they're, it's like a block of wood with holes drilled in it. And you can actually make your own as well, and it's really easy to do. But some of the designs are not very good, and you know, some of them are using wood that has got chemicals in it, so that's not good. And so you have to be careful of buying like the cheapo ones. There are some guides online if you do a little research that tell you like what to look for, but a lot of them encourage you to buy your own. There's actually a local woman who has a company called Solo Bee, and I like her design, and she's gotten, you know, the stamp of approval from a lot of entomologists and scientists saying like this design is great. Because one of the problems with the designs is they don't have like a very good roof, or they have too many of the hollows, because you don't want, like, sometimes you see these really giant ones and they call it like a bug hotel, but those aren't really good because the solitary bees are solitary. We don't want all the bees living right next to each other, because that's not what they do in nature. So it's better to make or buy several small little houses and then set them up in different places all over the yard. What's really interesting about most of these native or solitary bees is that they don't go very far. Like honeybees will travel like 6 miles to visit flowers from their hive, but these bees, some of them only go like, you know, 50 yards from where their nest is. So I always encourage people to make sure you're planting a lot of native pollinator plants ahead of installing these little houses for the bees, because what happens is people buy the house and they don't really have the right flowers in their gardens, and then they never get any bees. Yeah. And they get spiders, or, you know, they get wasps.
No, I mean,
not that wasps are bad, but but if you're trying to get bees, you really want to plant native pollinator plants and establish some habitat.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. If you build a home and you're 50 miles outside of town and your car only drives 20 miles, you're never going to make it to the grocery store.
Nope.
You know, and you won't stay at that home too long. But, you know, if you build a home next to a grocery store, then you'll be okay, because, you know, push come to shove, you'll be able to walk there, kind of a thing. And you know, like, people don't think about that. And that makes so much sense to kind of put these plants into the landscape ahead of time. So that way, when you do bring the bees, they stay in the landscape. They stay there. They will not move around, because, as you mentioned, otherwise you're just going to have little other critters moving into these homes. And probably the bees that you want won't move in there if there are spiders or these other things, right?
Mm-hmm, exactly. And so that's the other thing, is like, you kind of got to clear out those tubes every once in a while. If they look kind of spidery, you got to kick out the spiders. Mm-hmm. And most of these, you know, I'm kind of new to these homes as well, in terms of like practicalness of me using them. But I got some in my yard, and I don't have any bees in them yet. So I'm like, I have to plant more. I have to, you know, I have to clean them perpetually and kick out the spiders, because I'm not sure. Different species begin nesting at different times throughout the year. So I know that last year I planted some native milkweed for the monarchs. I planted some narrowleaf milkweed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I planted it for the monarchs, but then I got all these leafcutter bees living on it every single day for like 1 month in the middle of summer, towards the end of summer. So different species come out at different times during the spring and summer, and some of them are only out and active for like a month.
Yeah, and it is really interesting, because these are, I kind of feel also, when people look up native bee species for their area, no matter where you're at, you have native bee species, and they're not always the standard European bee look that we're accustomed to. So sometimes when you're looking in your garden, you start seeing different bugs, and you might not even realize that that is a bee, and or that is a specific native bee. As you mentioned, this, you know, leafcutter bee, you know, they might think it's some other kind of bug. They don't realize it's a bee because of what it looks like or because of what it's doing. So it's really neat research for you to do, is just, You know, if you're in Washington State, look up your native bees and you'll start seeing pictures of bugs that you've probably have seen before, but you didn't even realize they were bees because we're so locked into that European bee, gold body, striped, you know, back end, you know, winged thing. And, you know, some of them look very different. Hey, Hillary.
I think we've answered Rick's question when he says
about urban environments.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was just going to lead with that. One of the questions that we had was, you know, can you keep bees in an urban environment? We have just about a minute. So we might have to take a break. But, you know, can you elaborate on that about beekeeping in kind of an urban environment, Hillary? Or even these solitary bees in an urban environment?
Yeah, I mean, keeping those solitary bees in an urban environment, you definitely can. The only limitation is that you have to, you know, create habitat. There might be existing habitat and it would work out for you, but it's better if you're contributing to that by planting for them. And like I said, you don't need very much space to do that. I've seen people who just put those little bee houses on their balconies, like of an apartment building, and they'll get bees in there. So it's worth trying, and you just never know.
Hey, Hillary, we're going to take a quick break. Hold on to that thought. I'm going to pay some bills on our network, Biz Talk Radio. So hold on to that thought. And again, those watching on Facebook Live, questions, comments, we are taking a few. So we'll get to those as time permits, but still plenty of time left as we continue with Hillary Kearney. I'm Brian Main, Tiger Palafox, Garden America for your weekend. Your Saturday back after this on Biz Talk Radio and Facebook Live.
Welcome back to the Garden America Radio Show with Brian, John, and Tiger. The phone lines are open right now at 855-424-9825. That's 855-424-9825 or john@gardenamerica.com.
Thank you for being there. Those that are tuned in on Biz Talk Radio, this is the final segment of hour number one, which means you've got news coming up on most of these affiliates here on Biz Talk Radio. And then, of course, hour number two, Biz Talk Radio Garden America at 6 minutes after. But for the rest of us on Facebook Live, as we keep on rolling, Tiger, continue our great conversation with Hillary Kearney here on Garden America, Tiger.
Yeah, so Hillary, you were just discussing about keeping these bees in an urban environment and the solitary ones on, you know, you've seen these on balconies, on decks, and, you know, being able to keep them all depends on all the pollination plants that you have around them, right?
Yeah. And for honeybees, you know, they are very, very adaptable. So you could have, you know, I've seen people with honeybee colonies on their balconies that thrive. It's just that then you can't really go out on your balcony so much or you have to be very comfortable like around the bees. You might get stung out there or, you know, depending. So the honeybees take up, they just have a much larger presence wherever they are, but you can keep them on rooftops. You can keep them on balconies. You can keep them in your backyard. You just have to have the right kind of setup. You know, you just have to find good placement. And then there's certain little things you can do. Like sometimes you build a barrier around them. There's things you kind of have to research ahead of time to try and figure out where to put a hive. Like one thing I do locally is like I do mentoring appointments, and sometimes people have me come out just to help them choose a location in their yard or just to see like, is this even possible in my yard? And I've definitely gone to people's backyards where I'm like, no, I don't think this is a good yard for this. Like there either isn't enough space or they don't want to give up any part of their yard, because that's the thing, you have to dedicate like a corner or, you know, you have to dedicate a piece to the bees.
Yeah, and as you mentioned too, aside from dedicating that land, you know, you need to provide them with, you know, sources of water. I mean, they do fly, these hive bees do fly away long distances and then come back, but it's nice to have a little bit of water in your yard, some of the pollinator plants that they'll be using as well, as part of the benefit of having them as well in the yard is just the pollination. And that kind of brings me to another question I have for you, Hillary, is aside from keeping bees just being a good thing to do, the benefit in a yard where you're growing vegetables, fruit tree, where you have fruit trees, or you're just having a wonderful variety of flowers, you start to see it in the landscape, right? I mean, you don't realize how much actual pollination occurs until you can almost enhance it. You're going to see more flowers. You're going to see more fruit. You're going to see all that kind of stuff happen a little bit more by having these bees in your yard, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You'll get more fruit, and you'll get a better quality fruit. So, like, the more times a flower is pollinated, the bigger and better tasting the fruit is. So it's not just quantity, it's quality also.
Really? So then you'll get a better quality. I didn't even realize that. That's so neat and interesting that, you know, if you can have them pollinate better and actually have better fruit.
Did you see that question?
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and just read it.
Yeah,
here
go ahead.
Here we go. Our community garden sought permission to have a beehive in the garden center, but it was nixed by the attorneys who were worried that the city would be sued if somebody got stung. Should homeowners be concerned about liability in urban areas? Have you ever had anybody run into that problem of keeping an urban hive and then being kind of
stung and sued?
Yeah, anything like that, Hillary?
I've had a client who, or like a student that I was helping, whose neighbor got stung, you know, on multiple occasions because of basically what was going on is she had hives and they had gotten defensive, but then the neighbors were doing all this construction, so there was like always all of this like noise and machinery and just like stuff going on next door, and so there was a period where like a couple of different times the workers were getting stung, and the homeowner just got very aggressive and like threatened to sue. But I don't know. I mean, you can sue anyone over anything.
Yep.
Whether or not it results in anything, I don't know of any like cases where someone successfully sued someone for that, because it would be, I mean, I think it would be difficult to prove like that it was your bee. You know, there's bees out in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
Everywhere.
You step outside
like,
your door.
How can they prove that it was your bee that stung them?
Yeah, I mean, who knows? That house that was under construction could have had a hive in it that they weren't aware of.
So, so here's
those bees were coming out.
Here's my next question, Hillary. How many times have you been stung?
Oh, I don't count anymore.
Yeah. Really?
It's part of the job description.
Oh,
yeah, I mean, you know, it depends on what I'm doing. So it's like if I'm doing a bee removal, you know, and I'm having to like cut into someone's wall and pull out a 5-year-old hive that's like 100,000 bees, you know, something like that, I'm probably going to get stung even though I'm in a bee suit, like, you know, 2 to 5 times.
Right.
Just depends.
Oh,
you
man.
Know how angry the bees are. Sometimes they're very, you know, you'd be surprised. Sometimes they're very docile, even though I'm like ripping apart their home. You know, and then when I'm doing like an inspection on a hive, just like a maintenance inspection, I usually wouldn't get stung, but you know, sometimes you just accidentally, you know, squeeze a bee the wrong way and just things happen.
Yeah.
You want to take Rick's question there?
Yeah. So,
just below. So Rick's got a question from Idaho.
Let's see what he...
Well, Rick is saying, hey, Hillary, what types of companion plants would be good to have around the veggies to attract more bees?
Oh, yeah. That's...
A great one is borage. So that is an herb, and you can actually eat the flowers, and I think you can eat the leaves, too.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a really great pollinator plant, not just for honeybees, but for some other species, because it's a really fabulous, like, nectar plant. So the bees are going to flowers to collect nectar and pollen, and some plants only produce nectar. And some only produce pollen, and some produce both. But after the bee takes the nectar, there's an amount of time that passes before that flower regenerates its nectar. And some flowers, it's like, you know, it takes like a whole day to replenish the nectar. But with borage, it only takes 2 minutes. So when a bee visits a flower and takes that nectar, it'll be full again 2 minutes later. So if you plant borage next to your, you know, in between veggies, you'll get so many bees, and they just love it. And it reseeds itself and goes a little nuts. So just be aware of that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, you do have to be cautious on some of those plants that maybe are aggressive growers like that are also going to be something that kind of takes over a landscape. But if you have a big landscape and you're trying to feed the bees, what better choice than that? That's amazing. thing. Hey, we're going to take another break. And when we get back, we're going to finish chatting with Hillary Kearney with Girl Next Door Honey about bees. Lots of great information. Thank you very much.
Yeah, buzzing around this morning here on Garden America. John is off. It's myself, Brian Main, Tiger Pellefox. And so far, a lot of great information with Hillary Kearney, I should say. We're going to take a break. And for those on BizTalk Radio, you've got news coming up top of the hour. Facebook Live will keep on rolling. Those on BizTalk, we're back at 6 minutes after the hour. Still plenty of time for your questions, your comments here for Hillary as we're talking bees. This is Garden America on your weekend. Stay with us. Say good afternoon to those listening on BizTalk Radio, those on the eastern side of the country. Thank you and welcome. For those on Facebook Live, again, as I said, quick breaks. Going to keep on rolling and continue our conversation this morning with Hillary Kearney. We're talking bees, Tiger, and the last segment we talked about getting stung.
Yeah, and you know, before we let you go, Hillary, I wanted to ask you, and in terms of these solitary bees, these native bees, what are things that maybe people should avoid doing in their landscape? I mean, obviously the common or the most probably common mistake people make is using pesticides in the landscape, because blanket pesticides are going to kill all bugs, you know, good and bad bugs. So you want to avoid using those. But my question is also is that these kind of solitary bees are on the ground a lot. As you mentioned, their homes sometimes are just little like wood piles. Is there other things people should avoid doing in their landscape if they're trying to attract that particular style of bee?
Yeah, so actually, like, the vast majority of native bee species don't live in those little wood houses that we were talking about. Mm-hmm. Most of them live underground. Okay. They live in little, you know, beetle tunnels. Like, bumblebees often live underground in, like, abandoned rodent dens. Bumblebees also live in, like, wood piles and compost piles. So leaving some dead matter around, some of the bumblebee queens will, like, overwinter and leaf litter. Mm. So, like, leaving a pile of dead leaves, like, maybe not raking up all of your leaves, just leaving one area with some leaves and leaving compost piles, basically leaving messy areas in your garden with, like, decaying wood and wood piles and leaf litter and that kind of thing is good for native species of bees. But also, I encourage people not to till their soil. So instead of, you know, tilling between plantings, just layer compost and mulch on to practice sheet mulching instead, because then you're not digging up these potential bee nests that are underground.
Yeah, I mean, that's such a good point. I mean, we're big advocates for the no-till also here. And this is just one more thing, as you mentioned, that, you know, the soil is a web of life. And when you just basically shake that all up and move it, everybody's got to start over again. And bees are one of those things that you're possibly shaking up. And, you know, I'm so glad to hear you describe what is needed for these solitary native bees, because I have an excuse now when people come over my yard and they see it in a mess, it's because I'm trying to keep the bees.
Yeah.
And it's not that I was lazy.
Of course it is.
It's not that I was lazy and didn't want to rake up those leaves. It's not that I didn't want to, like, neatly put away that wood pile. It's I'm trying to keep the bees, Brian. See?
So absolutely.
Perfect excuse.
And you're going to stick to that story.
Yeah. Hey, Hillary, lots of great information. Man, so much fun stuff. So much new stuff about bees.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, it's amazing what we're learning every year.
Hey, real quickly, Hillary, before we go, what was the name of the bees, the docile ones that don't sting that we talked about this morning?
The leaf cutter bees?
Leaf cutters, okay. For those that are watching and listening on Facebook and BizTalk Radio, leaf cutters.
Yeah, leaf cutters and mason bees are the ones that will use those little houses.
Okay, good.
All right. And Hillary, girlnextdoorhoney.com is your website, right?
Yep.
And what do you have coming up? I mean, you're writing and illustrating a book currently, but you have other books that people can buy. Go to the website to be able to find information on that.
Did I put the link on here or did
yes,
you?
Yes, I will put the link on there as well. Any other information you want to share with our listeners?
Well, if anyone's interested in learning honey beekeeping, I have online classes that you can stream anytime. You can get to those from my website. I also have like a blog that's helpful for that. And then if you're just like wanting to learn more about the different kinds of pollinators, I actually created a game. So like earlier you were talking about you might see a bee and not even know that it's a bee. So this is like a trivia game that teaches you how to identify different pollinators, and you have to guess. You're shown a picture and you have to guess, like, is this a bee, a fly, or is it a wasp? And then there's trivia questions as well. So it's like, it's a card game and it's family friendly, and it'll teach you about all the different kinds of pollinators that you might see in your garden, so that hopefully you can start recognizing them.
Oh, that sounds like
a lot of fun.
I'll look for that and I'll post a link to that as well. That's awesome. Hey, have a great rest of your weekend, Hillary. Thank you very much for joining us this morning, and take care. We'll keep in touch.
Thanks for having me.
Great. All right. Thank you, Hillary. And again, as you mentioned, we had her on, I think, last year, but a lot of new information to share this morning, Tiger.
Yeah, and it's really exciting to kind of be able to kind of dive into specific things when they're new to people. And I know by no means are these bees that we're talking about new, because they were native and they've always been here. But I think just finding out more about what's actually in your yard is something that's fun and exciting. And I think that the European honeybee has gotten so much popularity over the past years, and that's been the focus across everybody's boards that we're losing focus of some of the things that are more important. Because like I say, everybody's growing lettuce. There's no concern of lettuce going away. Right. And, you know, bee populations, they're going to get replenished because it's a business behind it.
You know what we didn't talk about this morning, which is interesting, when we did the last time we had her on, we never brought up Africanized bees. The killer bees.
Yeah.
Which I guess are pretty much in check now, because what's happened is they've started breeding so much with other bees, European bees, so on and so forth, that they become a little more docile.
Yeah.
And for those that don't know the history of Africanized bees, it was in Brazil in 1956 when this beekeeper wanted to, because Africanized bees or African bees were very prolific in pollinating and creating honey. And so he thought if he could, you know, integrate the European bees with those Africanized bees, he would have some kind of a super bee that would do a great job. Well, unfortunately, their defensive characteristics and their aggression took over, and that's what you saw. You could be, you know, pushing a lawnmower a block
away,
they would attack because
the noise
disturbed them, right?
Exactly.
But with the honeybees, the European bees, and the bees that she talked about, leafcutter, mason bees, you see, their bees are very docile. In fact, when I walk down the steps to my front door, we've got bees all over the place because they're pollinating the flowers. I walk right through them; they don't bother me.
Yeah,
not at all.
Yeah, when they're focused on a job and that's what they're doing, they don't really care what's going on as long as it's not disrupting them, as long as it's not messing up what their focus is on. And exactly what I don't think we hear about the Africanized bees anymore, because they've been so interbred with other bees that it's bred down, and then the European bee has been bred up in the sense of now you find some hives that are a little bit more aggressive than you would think because of that Africanized DNA bloodline in them as well. So I don't think that that's as big a deal as it used to be, for sure.
Right. Now, again, any questions, comments as we continue? We've got a long way to go this morning here on Garden America with Tiger and myself, Brian Main. John is in Kentucky. So questions, comments, it is that time of the year. We're mid-May, getting into June. So wherever you live in the country, basically by now, Tiger, things should be happening, right?
Oh, yeah. You know, you've got tomatoes ripening. You've got, squash setting fruit. You've got flowers blooming. And a lot of stuff, in some areas, you're already on your kind of second level of it all, meaning, you're already starting to transplant new things. And, and that's the other thing I think people need to understand, especially when it comes to food crops, is just that sequential planting. Just because you planted tomatoes earlier doesn't mean you shouldn't plant, other tomatoes now.
No.
And you planted lettuce or things earlier, now you plant your second set of it. And so now is the time when people are starting to kind of get into that real busy time in the
garden. How are your roses doing, by the way?
They're doing well. Matter of fact, John came over on Monday because we were talking about the shipping and whatnot of plants. And he came over, took a look, and the roses are doing well. And orange juice was in full bloom, so it's a great little orange flower.
I'm cutting roses about every night and bringing them inside the house. It's just every, like I mentioned last week, I come home from work every day.
Yeah.
Here's two more. I mean, they're just prolific.
Dang.
Every day. And
they're
I've
happy.
Got about five or six varieties. Laura Bush, I've got the Pope John Paul, and I've got the three that John gave me. So again, it's just, you know, it's that time of the year.
Do you have a favorite of what you have right now?
You know, the Laura Bush, which I've had for many years, is a beautiful rose. The best way to describe it would be like a creamsicle, kind of yellowish.
Good one.
You know, remember the big sticks?
Yep.
Yeah, it looks like that. And just, and it makes a good cut rose to bring inside the house. It lasts about maybe a week. My green planet is thriving. So, yeah, it's a busy time of the year. So we should expect some questions from our listeners and our viewers here on Facebook Live today. We've got, you know what? We're going to take a break. I'm looking at the clock just in time for our break here. So, again, we're going to reset to open up the discussion for whatever you want to talk about here on Facebook Live. And those on BizTalk Radio, this is a pre-recorded broadcast from last week. But, again, you can always catch our show live. Go to our Facebook page, Garden America Radio, and you can watch us live and listen to us every week. That said, we're going to take a break. Back after these messages on BizTalk Radio, even quicker on Facebook Live. Like that, we snap our fingers and we are back. The mics are hot, both on BizTalk Radio and on Facebook Live with Tiger Palafox, Brian Main. Been a good morning so far. Hillary is always a great guest and always brings a lot to the table. So hopefully you gained a lot of information from that as we discussed bees. But right now, the nursery. You said things are calming down just a little bit.
Yeah,
right?
They're starting to calm down a bit. It's kind of getting, for us in San Diego, a little bit late into our spring now. You know,
that's because we start early.
Yeah, it's because we start early. And so by June, things are really calming down a lot. So we're only a couple weeks away from that. But, you know, when we're talking about calming down, that's like the calming down of the planting. But then that's the ramping up in the actual garden,
right.
Because that's when you're really busy. You've already planted your stuff, and now you're actually working the garden as well.
Somebody quickly is asking on Facebook the name of the rose that I said looked like a big stick. That was Laura Bush.
Yeah, the Laura Bush
Laura
rose.
Bush
I'll try
rose.
To find a picture, too, when
it's
I have
beautiful.
A second, and post it on there as well, because it is a beautiful rose. And, you know, it's funny, you know, I was going to talk about the nursery and people ramping up in their landscapes. This is one of the hard things during this time of year, too, is you're getting to the point where it's kind of hard to find stuff. And, you know, the roses are getting sold out because those are something that come in, you know, December, January. And a lot of nurseries will sell through their inventory. And now you'll start to see that slim down because they don't reorder for the summer because not a lot of people are buying and planting roses in the summer. So you're definitely going to want to get into the garden centers soon because you're going to start to see their inventory slim down, options slim down, things sell out and not be replenished. The other thing I will say is, even after the pandemic, plants we have a good supply on, but things like fertilizers, things like soil, things like pest control, that is getting a challenge to also keep
inventory
as well. So
we got a question: how to get rid of invasive ivy? Lots of it, and we've dealt with this for years as far as people wanting to know about ivy.
Yeah,
you know the best way: rip it out.
That is. But then it comes right back.
It's going to come back. But so you'd have to kill it, rip it out, and what? Treat the soil, or how would you do that?
No, there's a you know, glyphosate is an herbicide that gets sprayed on the foliage, and that will spray and kill the roots. Because ivy doesn't reseed, it replenishes from the roots. So that's probably the best way to remove it is to spray it with glyphosate, have it be killed. pull it out. Now, I will say, because, you know, people might not know what glyphosate is, but it is Roundup, and a lot of other products don't, you don't realize they are under different names.
Exactly.
All glyphosates. Yes. Those are all the same product as Roundup.
And so glyphosate is an ingredient then, right? If you'd like to...
It is the ingredient.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And so, you know, with a disclaimer, I know there's Roundup gets a bad name and it's in the press right now, and, you know,
but it's still on the shelves.
Well, I mean, it works, and the bad name isn't, any chemical isn't good for you. So I definitely don't suggest handling it, you know, in a way that you're going to ingest it.
There are safe ways to handle it.
There are very safe ways.
Thus lies the problem.
Yes. But I think the real bad name from Roundup comes from the use in farm crops, where they've created plants, genetically modified plants, that are resistant to Roundup, where a field will grow. They'll just dust the whole field with Roundup to kill all the weeds, but it leaves the soybean, it leaves the corn intact. Mm-hmm. And so it allows the farmer to clear his field or her field without, you know, messing up their crop. And, you know, then we get into a whole nother reason why it's bad. But as far as for home use, when you're trying to kill plants, mm-hmm. it's actually a really good and very specifically used product, and it doesn't go into the soil.
And, you know, follow the label.
Yeah, love it or hate it, you know, that's probably the best way to do it. Other than that, it is a backbreaking technique. People that say that, oh, I don't want to use chemicals, I only want to remove it in a safe, environmentally friendly way, it is pulling it, and you're pulling it for years and years and years. Yeah. And then eventually you'll get rid of it, and it will go away. But it's definitely not something that's done overnight. There's no silver bullet out there.
Here's where I would point somebody as far as you want to learn how to take care of ivy. Contact the grounds crew for the Chicago Cubs with their outfield out there. And they've had ivy there for years and years and years covering that brick wall. And somehow they're able to control it. I guess a lot of trimming all the time.
A lot of trimming.
But there you go. Next time you watch a baseball game at Wrigley Field, check out the ivy out there in the outfield.
Yeah. So, and that is a tough one because, you know, ivy will grow over and into anything. But, you know, that would be a good product. And even the non-toxic or safe kind of organic pest or herbicides, they don't kill it. They just burn it and control it. So they're not going to kill the ivy. So it's always going to be coming back.
So like you said, it's control.
Yeah.
And it's constant.
Yeah.
It's just, you want ivy, then you're going to have to work at it.
You know, when I first bought my home, there was that giant pepper tree in the back. And pepper trees reproduce as well.
Are they messy?
They're super messy. Yeah. They reproduce. When you cut them down, they come right back. And I knew this going into the removal. So the area that I anticipated not planting it for a couple years after the removal, because I knew I was going to always be treating that pepper tree. Well, now after years of treating it and controlling it, I have an area that I don't worry about this pepper tree coming back. But I invested in it.
Right.
And people don't always realize they want to have something happen right then. And they want it to be easy.
Yeah. Unfortunately, not everything is easy.
Yeah.
You know, you have to work at something for it to look beautiful. Just like if you drove by or stopped by somebody's house and checked out their beautiful landscape, and, you know, year after year it was maintained. Trust me, a lot of work went into that. They just didn't sit back in their living room, smoke a pipe, and look outside the window.
And it just happened.
You know, it's like anything.
And it's so cool to go and talk with people that do that. You know, when we go on garden tours and we visit, whether they're a personal garden or a community or city garden, and you talk to the people maintaining, you talk about Wrigley Field.
Right, exactly.
And you know, you don't understand the work that goes in to doing mm-hmm. that. I mean, you talk about Wrigley Field. They probably are trimming that weekly.
Yes.
And keeping it clean. And they have a team of two or three people that are doing it.
They don't wait for it to grow. They just cut it anyway.
Yeah.
And somebody else here, longtime listeners and viewers, you know, as Bruce Asakawa used to say, the label is the law.
Yeah.
When we talked about following that.
Yeah, following the label.
Attended your tomato mania.
Oh.
Sweet Nursery. Sweet.
Yeah. How are the tomatoes doing? Yeah, I want to know if you attended Tomato Mania, which ones did you get and how are they doing?
The spoon tomatoes?
Oh, did they get a spoon? Did they get a spoon? So, that's a fun one.
Yeah, tell us how that's doing and how long ago? That was about a month ago, right?
The Tomato Mania? 2 months ago.
Wow, let us know how that's coming along.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you mentioned the spoon tomato because right now in the news with all the pandemic craze and world craze of whatnot, do you know that there's a tea called boba tea? It's a Vietnamese tea and there's these jelly balls that go into this tea. Have you ever had it?
I never have, but can we hold that and take a break?
Yes.
I want to hear about this jelly tea when we come back from the break. And again, keep those questions coming on Facebook. Tiger and I do our best to keep up with you, so we're having a good time, obviously. And those on Biz Talk Radio, you're going to hear some of our great sponsors back quickly here on Facebook Live as we enjoy the weekend together on Garden America. Stay with us. Quickly here on Facebook Live, and for those on Biz Talk Radio, the normal break, we do appreciate that. So let's get back to your Vietnamese tea that you talked about before the break, Tiger. I've never heard of this. What's going on here?
I'm sure some of our listeners know what boba tea is, and it's a tea, you know, sometimes it's coffee-based, tea-based, fruit-based, but then they have these little jelly-filled balls in there that are part of it, and there's a worldwide shortage right now of that boba, and you're wondering, how did I get on this topic? Because spoon tomatoes are a small, like very tiny tomato, and they remind me of boba because imagine a boba little ball and have it be tomato flavored, and that's what I feel the spoon tomato is. And so I can only imagine.
So the tea tastes like a tomato.
Well, no. The tea tastes nothing like a tomato. I'm just saying the texture and the size are all right there. That if you ever had a tomato boba tea, then this would be the perfect tomato to incorporate into that tea rather than using boba.
I
love the spoon tomato, and it's great. And you know what's funny? I found, so I have two tomatoes right now growing. I told you one sacrificial. I've got my two-bite tomato that's just growing wild in my yard. And then I've got a Brad's Atomic Grape. And I've got them all growing right now. And the Brad's Atomic is the only one that hasn't ripened yet, but I'm really looking forward to that one.
How big are you anticipating that to be?
The plant itself?
Well, the actual tomato.
The tomato is about a little bit bigger than a ping pong ball.
Oh, okay. So not real big.
It's not a real big one.
But bigger than a cherry.
Yeah, but it's really cool because it's purple and green and it's striped and it's got this kind of cool color and flavor to it. But I haven't had it ripen yet, but my other ones have been ripening. And the critters don't go after the Brad's Atomic Grape. I don't know if it's because of the color or if it hasn't ripened yet.
Well, not yet. So, they haven't.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't know if it just hasn't because it hasn't ripened yet. Because they do know until it gets that ripe.
Hey, guys,
ripe.
This one's not ready yet.
Yeah.
Come back in two weeks.
They come over, feel it, touch it, see if it's soft enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. So
you don't know what the taste will be like.
No, it'll be the first time I'll have had it. So I'm excited about that as well. So that'll be fun. But my shishito peppers are in full bloom. I'm excited about those as well. They're going to be coming up soon. And I'll be bringing in peppers to you. And I'll be bringing Dana some dahlia flowers. Because
really?
You like your roses right now?
Sure.
I have dahlias that are starting to bloom. They haven't bloomed yet. But I mean, on each plant, I have seven, eight, nine buds.
Isn't that
on
something?
Each plant right now.
Isn't that something?
So when they're blooming.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
Well, we appreciate that. Absolutely. Yeah. I think we are caught up on all the questions. If not, then go ahead and repost and we'll try to catch up with what's going on. And you're looking for what right now?
Tanya asks, can you use Roundup on poison oak? And the answer is yes. It has to be on the foliage. So sometimes poison oak doesn't always have great foliage on it. Any glyphosate have to be applied to the actual foliage of the plant to be effective. And the other thing too is the label is the law.
Yeah.
But in California, we've had to dilute our products, our chemicals so much to the point that they're not always that effective. Mm-hmm. And if you buy a concentrate and mix it at a higher ratio, you'll be more successful with things like oak, poison oak or ivy or more aggressive vines. If you go buy the Roundup off of the shelf ready to use, it's always not super effective. Mm-hmm. And you can get higher concentrations if you do mix it yourself and then spray. But again, like I say, the problem with a Roundup product or glyphosate product is if you spray other plants with it and it gets on their foliage,
it's going to kill them.
It's going to kill them as well. So you got to make sure you're very specific.
So obviously, you don't do it during a windy day. You know,
next thing you know, you have a bush over here that's just dead. And you know, you're like, how did that happen?
And we used to have questions like that in the past where somebody would call and say, hey, you know, I was using Roundup or something else to kill, you know, XYZ. And then, you know, DEF over here on the right died. And said, well, was it a windy day? A little bit of wind. Well, that'll do it.
Started blanket spraying.
Exactly. So make sure the conditions are right before you do something like that.
It can be used, but I'd imagine you'd have to be a higher concentration rate than just the standard 2 ounces per gallon or whatever it may be used now.
Momotaro is another one.
Ooh, that's a good one. That's one of John's favorites too. He always talks about Momotaro as a great tomato, a good size one. You know, I mean, it's not huge, but it's big enough to actually, slice or
be a good sandwich tomato. Yes, I guess, right?
Exactly. So lots of fun stuff, and then that's fun. I mean, what we need to do is post on our Facebook and start having everybody share what's ripening in their garden now, because like I say, there are things that are starting to people are probably already harvesting eating
exactly
right now.
And people can post on our page. If you want to post a picture on our Facebook page, just let us know what it is, because a lot of people will want to know.
You got to kind of know what it is, because
what is
if
that
you just
plant?
Post a flower or a tomato without really knowing what it is, it's kind of like teasing somebody, because somebody's going to want it and then they can't get it later on.
Man, you want to read this next one? Tiger, do you see from Connie?
Okay, hold on 1 second.
Tomato Mania for me, 2021, and a list of all the tomatoes.
Oh, wow. Madame Marmande, Rakia, Radiator Charlie, Lemon Boy, Costoluto Genovese. That's the one that I'm sacrificing. That's the tomato.
You're going to let the critters eat?
I'm letting the critters eat. Just let them go crazy on it right now.
Well, how do you know they're going to go to that necessarily?
We will see, right? Yeah. But they're eating that one now.
Okay.
That's the one. Virginia Sweet, Gladiator Early Girl. And they bought them at Tapia Farms, and they were on 326 in the ground 2 weeks later. So, Connie, are you actually harvesting those ones now? Back in 326, mm-hmm. 2 weeks later, so they've been in the ground for about 6 weeks, right?
Yeah.
Because, my Costoluto Genovese is definitely ripening, and like I say, the critters are eating it. So I will have that one later, because they can only eat so much, and there's about 8 or 9 tomatoes on my plant right now, so I know that I'm going to get a couple down the road.
And what kind of critters are we talking about that you think are eating?
So it's nighttime critters. So I'm assuming it's a rat or something like that. I feel like if it was a raccoon, they would have taken the whole tomato gone.
Well, they do. They grab it, take it, and go.
Exactly. So the tomato is left on the bush, and I'm just seeing every night
big bites.
I'm just seeing every night it just go away. It started off with just like a little nibble,
right?
And every night it just seems more and more is going away.
You ever see big bites taken up before it completely goes away?
I don't
know. Because that would be a rat.
Like a bite out of it. I don't think it's raccoons. But then the other problem that I'm having right now is I got skunks, because my dog.
Stinks.
He hasn't been sprayed by a skunk, but I definitely feel he's been in an area where a skunk has been, mm-hmm. and he just smells like it.
But they're looking for grubs.
Yeah.
Skunks, right?
Yeah, they're looking for grubs and bugs more than vegetables and fruit and stuff like that. So,
that faint smell of a skunk.
Exactly. And you know, too, the reason why I kind of know it's a skunk is he smelled, and I'm like, man, you stink. And then I bathed him. and it just really didn't come off.
It didn't come off.
Yeah, and I'm like, oh, that's in there. That's in there. I got to really...
Tomato juice. Speaking of tomatoes.
Yeah, use my tomato juice.
I guess that
right?
does work.
We'll see. Yeah.
Somewhere. So yeah, go ahead. Those watching us, those on Biz Talk Radio, you want to go to our Facebook page, Garden America Radio, and post pictures just to make sure you let people know what it is and maybe a little background if you're so inclined. And then somebody asked me earlier, Tiger, if I would post pictures of my patio and the small areas that I have and how I've incorporated all the different plants in my yard, my front door area, which I think I'll do. Maybe I'll take a quick little video too and see how that turns out.
Yeah,
just to give people an idea how I've, I don't want to say cramped,
yeah.
but put a lot of different plants in a small area.
Well, you know, Brian is a classic plant hoarder where,
oh, yeah.
you know, if it's alive, there's no reason to get rid of it. And so you just keep it.
Or if somebody threw it away, yeah. I go to the dumpster and it's fine. I take it out.
Yeah.
It's like, what are you doing? You know, what are you doing?
Is there a plant that you have revived that you are most proud of?
Oh.
Like you revived it and you're like, man, I will never get rid of that plant because it was on the brink of death. It was right there.
A Dracaena.
When you got it, you were like, this thing's on the brink. I'm going to see what I can do.
But there was a few little viable areas of green.
Okay.
A couple of healthy little leaves.
Yeah.
I would say 75% of it looked terrible.
Okay.
Which I guess I can understand why somebody might have got rid of it. But I thought, nah, there's hope for this. I pulled it out, a little fertilizer, a little water, put in a bigger pot, and within a month, right back. Well, they're tenacious too.
They are. I mean,
brought it back from the brink of death.
Yeah, and now it's thriving.
Oh, it's, you know what? It's huge. It's 15 feet.
Wow.
It's huge. I'll show you. I'll take a picture, speaking of that. So we're going to take a break here on Biz Talk Radio and Facebook Live, which means we've got one more segment coming up after this. It'll be a short segment, 7 minutes or so. So still time to get your questions, your comments in, and continue the fun here. John is back next week. He's off today. It's me and Tiger. With that, we're going to take our final break. Final segment coming up next here on Garden America. And just like that, we have made it to our final segment on your Saturday afternoon or Saturday morning, depends upon when and how you're listening to us. Could be pre-recorded, could be streaming, could be digital. We have a lot of different media platforms here on Garden America besides Facebook and the radio, so we do appreciate that. And a good show this morning in terms of questions, comments. Did you see Connie's latest, Tiger?
Yeah, I love this. It just shows the evolution of your landscape through the years as well. Her comment is, not harvesting, but fruit on and growing. So she's not getting any ripe tomatoes yet, but they're fruiting.
Mm-hmm.
And she says she's got cats, so not too many rat issues, which is awesome too, because cats are really important about keeping those out of the yard. We have cut back on half of our tomatoes in the past years, put some sod down to make the play yard a play yard for the new grandchildren. Can't wait to teach her the joy of a ripe tomato picked and eaten in the garden. And it's
instead
so neat.
Instead of going to the grocery store.
Yeah, but I mean, it's so neat to be like, okay, well, let's go ahead and put some sod down, give an area for the grandchild to play, but then also we're going to keep this kind of, you know, growing your own food mentality going and go with that.
Right below that, Linda's question.
Is it Poa annua that is still prevalent in my yard? As far as the kind of weed kind of ground cover.
Now, isn't that aggressive as well? Isn't that like an invasive, like a,
it is.
You talked about ivy?
Yeah, I mean, John even...
I think it might be worse.
John was talking about trying to use that as like a ground cover at one point
in
time.
Just give up and let it be a ground cover.
Exactly. And, you know, it's just, you know, annual bluegrass. It's an invasive grass. And
very invasive, very aggressive.
Exactly. And so, you know, you you know, want to be able to control it. I don't know what is she saying. Is it prevalent in her yard?
We haven't seen your yard.
Yeah, I don't know.
Take a picture. You know what? There's an example. Take a picture. Here's a good example for those on Facebook Live and BizTalk Radio. A question like that. Take a picture. You can post it on a Facebook page with your question, and one of us during the week or maybe during the next show will answer it.
Yeah, exactly. Because
so that feel free, Linda.
Yeah, that is something that we kind of need to be able to see to be able to kind of determine what's
going
on.
And not just that, but moving forward, anybody who has questions and has a picture, you know, like, what is this? Or what's the name of that? Or you know, a picture maybe of a chewing insect where we can identify what it might be.
Yeah, right.
Things like that.
This is such a classic Southern California gardener. And if anybody listening that's living on the East Coast is going to hate this comment. But Patty wrote, Cherokee purple plant tomato going into the third year.
Very good.
Yeah. I mean, people, you know, when we over year your tomatoes and it's just year after year.
Now, if that's in the ground after 3 years, it's time to move it next year, isn't it?
No, I mean, you just let it go. It's just going to keep going and going.
You don't need to, you know, every tomato.
The reason why you move.
Because they take up all the nutrients in the ground.
But if you're fertilizing, you're fine because you're replenishing.
Okay.
Or the other issue would be a disease or nematode.
Exactly.
You would move them for those reasons. But if it's in the ground the third year, it's not having those issues. So it's completely fine.
So Connie is back again.
And she writes, thank you for early comment about sometimes a bad plant. I have felt like I killed it. And other 10 new ones growing, so I can let it now go and go get a new one. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess
so about that idea that you can plant 10 plants, and if you lose one or two, that's expected. That's normal.
Well, that's good. That's 80% right there.
Yeah. And you know, sometimes when you pull it out of the nursery pot, you don't realize you broke the root ball.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you sometimes like we say that there's just a bad plant. Sometimes that specific spot where you planted it caused something that the next time when you plant it there, it's not going to be a problem. Because you've already fixed the problem that was there before, whether it was heavy clay soil or rocky or gopher or something. So don't get too hung up when you lose, you know, one or two plants out of 10. That's not a bad ratio.
No. Yeah. If you know, 75-80% of what you have is growing, you're doing pretty well.
Yeah. The hardest thing is when you do plant 10 plants and 2 years later one or two die. That's the challenge because there's already been invested growth and time, and then you know you don't know why sometimes that happens. That's the worst, but a lot of times that has to do with gophers.
And Lenore's is batting almost 1,000. 5 tomato plants that are from last year.
Wow.
That's excellent.
That's
good.
Really good.
Now, I have to imagine that these are very smart people watering, fertilizing, taking care, you know. Not to say that you can grow something and pay little attention. It may grow, but you know, taking care of it and knowing what you're doing certainly helps.
But like I say, the East Coast people are listening, and they're like, are you kidding me? The same tomato year after year?
Yeah.
That's impossible for them.
Yeah, well, remember, February and March, we're out in the garden.
Yeah, exactly.
Pretty much all year long.
We're planting them.
Yeah, exactly. So, just a couple of minutes to go here on this Saturday morning, Saturday afternoon here, Tiger. John back with us next week. Still time for maybe a question or two. That said, the nursery next week. What's going on? What are you guys doing? What are you concentrating on?
Yeah, we're still just kind of, you know, wrapping up the spring. We're still getting in a lot of new stuff every week as far as just, you know, different items. And then, like I say, we're transitioning into the summertime planting. So a lot more of the larger scale shrubs, perennials, things that are going to tolerate the summer heat. But it's still stuff that is coming out now, new into the year. So we're at that late spring plantings as far as the plants and flowers that come into play. And then the other thing too is a lot of citrus trees. I will say I'm highly disappointed and kind of a bit bummed for our people that are wanting to plant citrus now. Just the growers were so inundated last year, and you can't make things grow overnight. So what they're selling to nurseries now are nowhere near of any size what we used to be able to get.
Right.
Just because, you know, it might take 6 to 8 months for them to grow out that tree. And they sold out. And they planted as soon as they sold out, but now we're seeing the effects. And so when you go into a garden center and you were looking for that 4-foot tall citrus tree, now it's 2.5 feet. You know, it's a bummer.
And we're going to leave you on that note. Just like that, quick show.
Wow.
Hopefully John's having a safe trip, and we do appreciate you tuning in on Facebook Live and those listening on Biz Talk Radio. Not bad. Covered a lot today. Hillary was great with the bee talk. Went by very fast. So we're going to wrap things up here on Garden America for this Saturday, your weekend. Hope it's been a good weekend for you so far. Thank you for tuning in. John is back next week, and we'll do it all over again with myself, Brian Main, John Bagnasco, and Tiger Palafox here every week on Garden America. Take care. Be safe. Bye-bye.